Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we are back with another exciting edition of, well, it's not really exciting, but we are back with another edition of the Clipset podcast. I am fresh off a Hawaiian vacation and blissfully, mostly, ignoring the Clippers for about a week. I'm feeling pretty good about that, but let's check in with you, Brian. Brian, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I just want to say this, and look, not attacking you, but I don't appreciate you glossing over what you just said. Did you or did you not come home with a Barbasol can full of embryos hidden in the chamber? That's what I want to know.
I did not go on the Jurassic Valley tour. Ugh. We can get to that later. But I did see the can on the side of the road, and I thought about it. I thought about picking it up, but I didn't. But I thought about it.
Well, I'm not doing the rest of the show because you didn't say the magic word.
All right, well, I'll do the rest of the show as a monologue. I got a lot of thoughts. So
just real quick, I know, look, whatever. Let there be rabbit holes, okay? By the way, that's the title of the episode. Let's just talk about how timeless that movie is. It's got to be one of the most timeless movies ever made, right? Like especially when you're talking about, like, you know, technology and film, right? Because so many movies age poorly. Jurassic Park still looks incredible.
It still looks, it looks good enough where you're like, yeah, this works. Because it was that sweet spot of practical and CGI.
Well, so yeah, not heavily dependent on CGI, and that's why it looks incredible.
Right. And I actually have a lot of thoughts about the overuse of CGI and the fact that so many people can't spot CGI. If I can take 2 seconds to go down a rabbit hole of my own.
Let there be rabbit holes.
The fact that people thought Kobe jumped over a car, that DK Metcalf jumped 4.5 feet in the air a couple weeks ago. When you're watching these videos, look for a change in frame rate, and that will scream to you that it is not a real thing that you are looking at. People are getting duped left and fucking right with all of these videos that are very clearly not real. And it's like, maybe I just have a I'm really not trying to be an asshole about this, where, like, I'm tooting my own horn, but maybe I just have a discernful eye and I can tell the change in frame rates or, you know, how something looks real or doesn't look real. But the fact that these people are asking questions about whether or not things are real is crazy to me, because so many of these things where it's like, oh my God, did you see that video? And it's like, yeah, dude, that's very clearly not a real thing.
Yeah, man. And just the amount of deep state fakes that are coming out these days.
Open your third eye, ladies and gentlemen. They're lying to you, man.
Hold on. Stop. We're making the wrong show. We didn't trade for that point guard. Let's get into our show.
Turnover set podcast. Bringing it to you live. No. But yeah, that movie is great. I think the practical effects are really what make it hold up.
One of the better sequels, too. I'll say that. One of the better sequels in Hollywood. Number two was pretty good. Not going to lie.
The one where they're in San Diego?
That's like the last 15 minutes of it. But yeah, where you get to see San Diego just get destroyed. Kind of fun.
Well, yeah.
I love that he didn't cross the border. I love that the T-Rex didn't cross the border. It was
he didn't have his passport.
They've been through enough. I'm going to destroy this side.
Oh, you thought it was sympathy. No. I think he realized.
It was the Hollywood woke T-Rex that wouldn't cross the border.
Yeah. Oh my God. But yeah. So that movie does rule. And you can't really beat any movie that has that absurd Jeff Goldblum laugh to start. It is maybe the weirdest laugh ever recorded on film. If you don't remember it, please just Google Jeff Goldblum Jurassic Park laugh and enjoy it.
I made a YouTube video and it's called 10 minutes of Jeff Goldblum's Jurassic Park laugh and Kawhi Leonard's Raptors laugh. And it's just
back and forth.
I'm linking the dinosaurs. I'm linking the laughs. It's very high concept. And it goes on. I said 10 minutes. It's actually 10 hours. And it goes on for 10 hours, just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
Do you remember those? There was a specific period in time on the internet where there were things that were just 10-hour loops of something.
Yeah, my favorite and was one of them. The diabetes one. It was the dude from the diabetes just going, diabetes, 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 diabetes for 10 hours.
My favorite was Where's the Trigger from the Batman movie. It was just him going, where's the trigger? Where is it? Where's the trigger? Where is it? In that insane, like, guttural voice that he used in that movie. I think it was Dark Knight. That one got me. All right, let's get into the show.
Let's do it.
Unfortunately, we have to talk about the Clippers now. We're going to do the show. Brian is going to talk about the Clippers. I'm going to talk about Hawaii because it's way more fun for me to talk about Hawaii than anything Clipper related.
I love this.
So I'm actually going to start this one.
Okay.
Because it is positive vibes, and I feel like there are more positive Hawaii vibes than Clipper vibes right now. My biggest positive takeaway is that waking up to a view really improves your mental health.
Mm. What was your view?
Opening the windows. Oh, man. I was on the 17th floor on Waikiki. And so I got to open my window and, like, I had a couple hotel, you know, towers or whatever ahead of me, but I could see the ocean. There was a park right underneath me. So there was like a nice lush green space. And then you could see Diamond Head in the distance. And so it was just perfect. No direct sun either. So I only, like, it was bright, but it never got like hot when you were sitting there. It was just really, really nice. And when you were sitting out there on the lanai, you know, you got to hear the breeze and the palm trees. And it was just, honestly, anywhere I live, I want a view. I want a balcony. I want to be able to be outside because, honestly, being outside is the best. Yeah. And, like, every time I was inside during my Hawaiian vacation, I would look outside and think, why are we not out there? Because we need to be outside right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, views are just, I'm a views guy.
Mm-hmm.
There are probably people out there who aren't like views people, but I am heavy into, like, if I can have a balcony and just stare, even at just a, like my old apartment, you were there.
Yeah.
That beautiful tree in the courtyard off of my unit. I would just sit in my living room and look at the tree and, like, the leaves moving in the wind. And I would just be transported to a place that was way better than whatever the fucking hellscape I was experiencing in real life was.
That view, mental health. That sounds perfect. There's only one thing I would change in it. How you said you could see Diamond Head in the distance. I would change it to Buckethead. If you could see Buckethead in the distance, I think it would have been
just
perfect.
Fucking shredding.
Other than that, it sounds gorgeous, dude. It sounds absolutely. It sounds like you got sold a little short with the distant view, but it's all good. It sounds great. I've not been to Hawaii. I need to go. I recently was watching something. Look, another rabbit hole. That's how this episode is going to go. I was watching something from the early 2000s recently, and a guy was wearing a Hawaiian Island Creations hat. And I was like, I forgot all about that company. What a late 90s, early 2000s brand that I have not thought about in so long. I need to get to Hawaii, though, literally for the sole purpose of doing the Jurassic Valley tour. Like, that's all I would want to do while I was there, day after day.
It was really beautiful, and the prices were actually reasonable. This was sponsored by Jurassic Valley. I guess we have to disclose that, but
that's fine. I'd pay whatever they asked me to. Dude, let's go. All right.
Big dog Jurassic Valley tour. Yes, that's what we're going to start doing.
Big Jurassic Valley dogs. Okay, so my biggest positive from the Clippers, look, it's the... it's the topic du jour. It's the topic of a couple weeks. Russell Westbrook. Dude, he's had some really good shifts. I've got to say, there have been... Look, in that Warriors game, that first half, pretty good. He looked great. You know, like, even in the... I'm blanking right now. The Denver game.
The last game?
Yeah.
Oh, the Denver game.
Denver game. there were some great shifts there. Like there have been moments where, you know, and it typically happens first half, I feel like, where he's doing everything you want Russ to do. And like, you know, it's whether or not he's being overused, that's a different topic. But I think there are, like, I just want to highlight some of the great things that Russ is doing. And he has done a good job of creating pressure on the rim. He's done a pretty good job of, as you said, making that extra pass, right? That second or third swing of the ball that finds the open shooter. Like, there are things that Russ is doing here that I respect, right? And like, look, we've talked about his gamble defense. Again, go back to the first half of the Warriors game. Some of those gambles paid off, right? Like, he got a decent amount of steals out of there. Like, he has the length and the strength to do these things. It's just, the biggest thing is, you know, knowing when to and when not to use certain, you know, whatever, certain things that he does, right? But
yeah,
I think that Russ has had some good shifts. Like, I'm not going to sit here. Look, it's been a disaster since the All-Star break, but I just want to say it's not all on Russ, and that Russ is actually, like, he has shown signs that he can be a contributor to a good team.
Yeah, I'm going to do this in real time, so we'll find out whether or not you're statistically right or not in real time. And I feel like I have some information here that would support your claim that Russ's first halves have been pretty good.
Yeah.
Russ is shooting 61% in first halves as a Clipper. He has a 30-9 assist to turnover ratio.
Great.
And the Clippers have only lost his first half minutes by 14. So not bad. And then let's do the second half here live on air. Second half, I don't think that this includes overtime, unfortunately. But here we go. It's loading. Second half, 44% from the floor. He has a 10 assist to 12 turnover ratio.
Ooh.
But for some reason they have only lost those minutes by 6. So like, the play itself has gotten worse in the second half. Some of those bad decisions have happened more in those second halves than they do in the first half. And so I think there is this like interesting place that we sit at with Russ. Now, obviously I didn't watch every second of every game while I was in Hawaii, but unfortunately, I watched too much. Like, I spent too much time trying to watch the Clippers while on vacation. I told my fiance that I wouldn't do it, and then I did it anyway, and I feel bad about it. But
and you're now looking for a new fiance.
That's right. I came back alone. She stayed. And so,
how Robert Wagner of you?
Here's the deal. It really feels like beginning of these games, Russ plays controlled. Second half of these games, the Clippers ask him to do too much, and he plays out of control.
I have a theory.
He becomes Russ in the second half. The Russ that we were worried about. So I don't want this to be a bash Russ positive takeaway, because I really don't want to do that. Because the problem isn't Russell Westbrook as a player, right? I obviously have my concerns about him as a player, and I don't think that I've been proven totally wrong with my concerns in terms of like what he's done as a Clipper. He does bring things that this team doesn't have. He does bring things that the team could use, all that stuff. But the real problem is the Russell Westbrook situation, which is the fact that he is being given starter minutes every night.
I'm glad that you're saying this, because this is going to tie into my theory. Can you actually, if you still have first and second half numbers up, what is the difference in usage for Russ in first and second halves?
Let me see if I can do that really quick.
Because this might back up.
Filibuster here?
Okay, so this, the reason I'm asking you to look this up is I think that, let me start to lay out the theory and we'll see if this backs it up. Russ is first half, like you said, his decision making is great. He's making a lot of the right plays. He's doing all of that. Second halves, look, the tie mentality has been, I'm going to ride my stars down the stretch. And I think maybe part of the problem is he is treating Russell Westbrook as a star in the second half.
Oh, yeah.
And that is the problem, right? That is the problem, is that like Russ is kind of taking on a more of a role player, I'm here to help out role in the first half. And the second half, he's been fed this like, let's water the ego and watch it grow kind of thing, right? And again, not an indictment on Russ, because if you're being told, look, you're one of the big ponies that we're going to ride down this thing.
You're MVP, Mr. Triple-Double.
Right.
Those
right.
were the quotes when they got him.
Yeah. Right. And like, if that's what's happening, then that's not on Russ. That's on the coaching staff for putting the ball in his hands way more in second halves than they should, using him at a much higher percentage than they should in second halves. And that is leading to these problems.
21% in the first half of games as a Clipper, 29.4% in the second half of games as a
there
Clipper.
It is. There it is. A third. He's a third of the usage, right?
And those are superstar usage numbers
yes.
in the second half. That
yes.
is like what you would want Kawhi Leonard to have.
It's
in
a big
the
three. They're treating it like a big three in the second halves, and that's not what they should be doing.
But not even. They're giving him the ball to be the star.
Right.
So that the stars can be secondary players.
Yeah.
To Russ.
Right. And again, we're saying this not to bash Russ. This comes down to the coaching staff. That is where I am placing the majority of the blame of everything that's happening right now, if I'm being super honest, right? And my biggest positive is it's not Russ's fault. I am not blaming Russ for what's happening here. Because right. when he is being put in the best position, which is in the first halves, the way they're treating him in the first halves, he's good. He's helping the team. You know, like he's doing everything you would want Russell Westbrook to do, right? Like he's efficient in
setting screens.
Exactly. He's doing those things. The problem is they are misusing him in second halves by overusing him, right? And to what you said, look, I texted you during the Denver game very sarcastically, super out of character for me. I don't know why that happened, because I'm never sarcastic. But
right.
I said, I think it's really special that a guy like Reggie Jackson, who was asked year after year to do way more than he ever should have done, to shoulder more responsibility than a guy like him ever should have, and did it willingly, gets to watch Paul George put his hands on his knees in the corner for multiple possessions in a game. And that is the problem, right? And I texted you that in the second half. And it's, the stars aren't the stars anymore. And that is the problem. But positive, when Russ is being used in the appropriate way, I love it. I think he looks really good. Like you said, like his decision making when he's, 20% or less usage, beautiful. It's exactly what the team needs.
Low leverage Russ has been better than I anticipated.
Yeah.
High leverage Russ has been what I anticipated.
Right. And that leverage is not on him, dude. It's not on him.
No, Well, let's get into our biggest negative, because I think that we've already started that. But to say it again, Russ is not the problem in terms of his individual play. It's the situation that has been created.
Right.
With all of the missteps surrounding Russ.
Yes. But
which to me feels like actually every step he's had since Oklahoma City is
totally
not making Russ be something different than what he has been.
Yeah. He's basically, since he left OKC, nobody has really taken the time to put him in a position to succeed. Right. Like he's been misled.
It's either or. It's either Russ succeeds or the team succeeds, because the makeup of the team hasn't really made sense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even in Houston, people talk about Houston as this like great Russ success. That team was scuffling, playing the way that had won them 67 games because they had added Russ, or whatever they won with Chris. because they added Russ, and Russ didn't fit into the Harden Capella pick and roll.
Right.
So they punted Capella so that Russ had all the space in the world, and that unlocked Russ in the regular season. But then once the playoffs came, that didn't work anymore.
Right. But that's proven my, you're not putting him in a position.
Right. Right.
To win. That, to
that's
succeed.
Not the way to succeed both with Russ and as a team with Russ.
Like, right.
So it's always been an either or decision. And the Clippers in the first half are doing the Russ in the like in the place where it works for the team. And the second half, it's let's try to make Russ shine. And that's just too much right now at this point in his career.
Yeah. And it's unfair to Russ. Yeah. I truly believe it's unfair to Russell Westbrook.
Because he's going to draw the ire, right? And yep. All of the stats are going to be pre-Russ, post-Russ. Here's Russ's numbers, blah, blah, yeah. blah. And like the numbers do say that they have actually struggled with Russ on the floor,
mm-hmm.
particularly with Kawhi and Paul George. And that is something they're going to have to figure out because I think they're pretty much married to this. I don't think that there's any chance at all that Russ is going to be maybe even shifted to a smaller role. I just don't see that happening. I think they all have too much invested in it. It's kind of like a dig my heels in moment, I think, for the front office, or I mean, not for the front office, for the coaching staff and for the stars. They're going to have to try to make this work.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's just frustrating. It's just frustrating that the team again has, I tweeted about this, but like on the quad pod, I don't remember who said it, but there was a gun being pointed at their foot and they were just, I'm going to pull the trigger. Don't think I won't. And then they pulled the trigger. And
where's the trigger?
Where's the trigger? but it's like, anyway, whatever. It's all frustrating. I've got stats here. It's okay. We could talk about it later.
Okay.
Let's get into our biggest negative.
Yeah. All right.
Do you want me to go first?
I'll start us off since we're already on this.
Okay.
I mean, dude, honestly, pick one, right? Like, that's where we're at this point. Like, I almost struggled with this because I was like, I got to choose one. I got to choose one here. But it's the turnovers, dude. And again, I want to say this. This is not a single finger, you know, pointing at Russ. This is all over the place, right? There's so much I want to say about this. That's why we do a podcast, I suppose. So look, the turnovers issue is what bothers me is kind of the conversation that has come about with the turnovers, right? Like, because it's become this, like, here was the turnovers with Terrence starting. Here's the turnovers with Russ starting. They've expanded and like, yeah, okay, you know, look, I love Terrence in the starting lineup. I agree with that. He should have stayed in the starting lineup. But this is, again, putting all the blame on Russell Westbrook, and I don't think that that is the issue. Obviously, as you stated, second halves, turnovers are brutal. But there's a bigger issue here, and it's kind of the issue with the team all season, right? Like, it started with all, you know, too many guys who don't know what their role is, right? Don't know what mm-hmm. you're supposed to do, blah, blah, blah. And then you bring in Russ. Look, first half, he's great. But part of the issue here is the stars are so out of rhythm for taking over a game in the second half after being able to kind of coast in the first half that I think that's a huge part of the issue here, right? With the turnovers is like, okay, now you're gonna have the ball and do a lot more that you weren't doing in the first half. And it's a lack of rhythm. And that has been the issue this entire season, right? Changing the lineups, guys not knowing when they're playing, who they're supposed to be when they're playing. And it's just been even worse, right? It's like now we're looking at it that was the macro issue. Now we're looking at it in the micro, and it's two completely different styles, first to second half. You're taking the ball out of the stars' hands. It's just, of course it's going to lead to sloppy play. Of course it is, because you're back to guys not knowing exactly what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. This, look, there are things I could say and, you know, that would highlight exactly why I think the turnovers are back up. But I think that what you're saying is probably the biggest reason in general. The Clippers did not have this wiggle room. I think I tweeted about this yesterday. The Clippers did not have wiggle room to do this. They did not have wiggle room to try to change their play style. They did not have wiggle room to add a new starter. They did not have wiggle room to do all this stuff, right? They had proven for the first fucking 45 games that they didn't know what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
That they wanted to turn the ball over, that they didn't know what they were doing, that they had no cohesion because people were in and out of the lineups and nobody knew what they were doing because of rotations and roles and all that stuff. They finally settled into a cohesive unit that could play together and not turn the ball over every other minute. And then they decided, but what if we fucked with all of that? And it's like, I don't understand how you look at the way that this team has struggled throughout the 2-1-3 era, but specifically this year, mm-hmm. and how much they've struggled with these kinds of questions and think, no, it's okay. 21 games is enough time.
Yeah, I think Lucas made a great point about this recently, where he was saying, like, look, this team is old and their style is slow and methodical, right? And we've seen them succeed yeah. being slow and methodical. And then all of a sudden, they got this wild hair up their ass to go, let's play with a much faster pace. And you're seeing an old, slow team struggle with that pace and those quick decisions and moving the ball. It's, of course, that's going to lead to turnovers because that's not their style.
Right. But also, it's like we were just talking about this in the positive takeaway for some reason. But like, if they wanted to have a change of pace option, that logically makes sense
mm-hmm.
to have someone who you can throw out there for the guy we've been asking for years, a chaos guy. If you want to have 15 minutes of chaos, that's a really nice card to have up your sleeve. But to go from we need to play plotting basketball and out execute people and have our stars outstar the other team, which has basically been the plan the entire time, you can't then just decide, no, we're super fast team now,
mm-hmm.
and that's how we're going to play. Because that's such a fucking jarring like change
yeah.
for a team to make with 21 games left in the season and a very small cushion above a line you need to stay above. And that line is the play-in line. And they decided, oh no, it'll be fine. Don't worry about it. We'll figure it out. When all the team's history has been that, oh, we're fine, we'll figure it out, doesn't actually work for them.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so crazy to me that they think that this is okay. And like, to me, maybe it's, you know, the slight slip in like Kawhi and Paul's overall play, even though Kawhi is back to being like a world.
Yeah, I was gonna say, not much of a slip with Kawhi. It just took some time to get there.
But like I tweeted about this morning, nobody has ever lost their minutes with Kawhi and Paul George in the regular season in the 2-1-3 era. Nobody. No one has done it.
When
the Clippers now have their...
For clarification, lost their minutes means like losing plus to the other team,
in the
not losing your playing minutes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, I'm saying like losing... When you're on the floor with Kawhi and Paul George, you have a negative plus minus.
Right, okay, right.
Yeah, yeah. So they're going to have at least one this season and probably multiple. For the first time in the 2-1-3 era, they're going to be multiple. The one guy who definitely had it was they were minus one in 61 minutes with John. 2-1-3 was. They're now minus 35 in 98 minutes with Russ on the floor with Kawhi and Paul George. And I think it's what you're talking about. They're trying to change their philosophy way too much
mm-hmm.
in the middle of this season, and they're doing it on steroids. Like, it didn't work with John. Obviously, the 2-1-3 sample was not good, but the team was 15-19 when John played. They were 5-3 when John played with 2-1-3. They're now 0-4 when Russ plays with 2-1-3. So that's 5-7. They're minus 36 in 159 minutes when 2-1-3 plays with a traditional point guard. Without one, the Clippers are plus 162 in 663 minutes with Kawhi and Paul George on the floor, and they're 14-6. It's like, how do you look at what makes your team good and decide that's not what makes your team good?
Look, I think this leads to a bigger question. Is it about, are these decisions about what makes the team good, or are they decisions about what makes a couple guys happier?
Right, and that's the problem. That's the problem. The stars do not seem to be happy. Again, this is where the blame lies.
Mm-hmm.
It's with the coaching staff, and it's with the stars. And to a lesser extent, it's with it, with the front office for acquiescing to this.
Yeah.
But I do feel like if Lawrence hadn't done it, contrary to what some people have said, if Lawrence hadn't done it, there would have been bigger problems.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of mild friction, I'd say, at the middle in the middle of the year. And I would just say that it affected the team. I think it was pretty clear that it affected the team.
Yeah.
And I think that Lawrence was faced with the decision of, I either give them what they want and maybe it works and they win, or I don't give them what they want and they quit on me and we lose and they have an excuse for losing.
Yeah.
And they take that excuse and run with it, because that's what this team has done at every turn, is take an excuse and run with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, dude, it's not Russ's fault that he's in this situation. It's not Russ's fault that, you know, the team is struggling with him. It's the fact that this team looked around at them being successful and fixing their biggest problem and decided, yeah, we don't give a fuck about that. Let's do something different.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes to Kawhi and Paul George's desire to have things be given to them. They want it to be easy. And it's not easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, maybe not Kawhi wants it to be easy, but Kawhi wants it to be easier. Kawhi is absolutely in the I want a point guard to set things up camp, because it is tiring to be Kawhi Leonard for 48 minutes and handle the ball and do all that stuff.
Right.
To
Kawhi's credit, though, but, and this is why we talked about this before the show, why I haven't completely flipped on Kawhi. All that being said, he may want those things, right? Like this is what he wants, blah, blah, blah. But when he hasn't had them, he hasn't let it affect who he is. He
does not go out there and pout.
Yeah, he still goes and he destroys worlds. You know, he's probably having one of the best seasons of his career, you know, since he like actually returned, right? I'm not going to count the beginning, first couple games, but since his actual return, he's probably having one of the best seasons. One of his best seasons as a Clipper by far. And
yeah, he's been awesome.
And he's
once
not
he lost the weight.
Yeah, he's not been, you know, whatever his feelings might be, it has not affected what he does on the floor, right? Like, he may say, look, I want a true point guard. I want blah, blah, blah. Could have been, look, I want Russell Westbrook, right? That could have been his outlook. But he didn't go out there and go, I'm going to shit the bed until I get it. He went out there and was like, all right, well, it's not here right now, but I'm still just going to dominate, right? Like, it's going to be more work than I probably want it to be, but I'm going to do it because that's what it takes. That's why I can't be fully out on Kawhi. Other guys, not just in jerseys, right? Other guys just with the Clippers, can't say that for. But Kawhi at least has gone out there and said, all right, I'm still going to be Kawhi when I'm out there.
Yeah. 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 I think we can end it.
Yeah. Let's go to the island. Biggest negative.
Traffic on the island just ruined my vibes, man. It really just ruined my vibes.
Is it that bad?
I don't even know what
worse
else
than LA
to say. Just as bad as like downtown on a game day.
Oh wow, okay. Yeah, it's pretty rough.
It took me like 40 minutes to get from the airport to my area where I was staying, and it was like 10 miles.
And were you just immediately looking around going, it's all these fucking Howleys just coming to the island. Like, what? Get out of here, guys.
No, I was like, why? I didn't leave. I felt like I circled the air for 5 hours and just landed back down in LA. I was like, what am I doing here? But yeah, it just, you know, I drove around the island, and it's like rush hour there is a real thing, man. And to think that an idyllic island would have rush hour just really harshed my mellow, man. It was really It was rough, bro. It was rough. I was not having a good time while that happened.
Yeah.
When I was away from the cities and I was like out in nature, great times. But the second I tried to like get somewhere else, I was like, fuck, man, I don't want to do any of this. Amen. And the parking. Don't even get me started on the parking. The parking situation in Honolulu is worse than anywhere I've been outside of New York City, which is also fucking criminal. We could talk about big parking right now, right? Big parking is one of the biggest gambits in this entire universe. The fact that you can get off charging me that much money to put my car somewhere is insane. Okay. How are the 10 wealthiest people in the world not all parking magnates? I'm just trying to understand.
Do you know they're not?
I looked it up. They're not. I think the closest one is 25. But it's like, how are you running these gambits where you're charging me $6 per 15 minutes to put my car? That's insanity. Okay. There's no way that's your overhead. Like you have to be raking in insane profits at this point. Like I defy any big parking magnate that listens to the Clipset podcast to tell me I'm not right, because these people are worse than fucking crime syndicates. Okay. It is the most insane thing that I've ever had to deal with. I spent most of my money while in Hawaii on a place to put my rental car. Shouldn't be the case.
Would this make you feel better if they kind of, you know, acknowledged what they're doing in a way, and the parking attendants all had top hats and monocles? Would that be better?
If they were, you know, adorned in gold jewelry, okay, I would feel better about it, because I'd be like, okay, that's where my money is going.
Yeah.
But these,
if they just look like CeeLo at the Grammys, whatever, like 10 years ago.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But it's real gold. It's all gold. It's 24 karat gold. But it's like, first of all these places are automated now. So that the death of American jobs, right, continues its steady march. But it's like,
oh, it's because no one wants to work anymore.
Yeah, that's right. But so these are all automated. So there's another part of your overhead totally gone. Okay. Yeah. Absolutely gone. And, you know, it's like the people who do work there are making minimum wage. These poor people are getting raked over the coals, forced to live paycheck to paycheck, to be churned through the underbelly, like the undertow of the American economy. Okay. These poor working people. And what, for what end? So that their big head honcho that with their sitting in their bathtub filled with gold get to fucking get fed grapes by another minimum wage worker. Like, it's just insane what these parking people do.
Yeah. Darkwing Duck has to be stopped.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty insane.
Okay.
The traffic and the parking. Yeah.
Well, let's get into hot take, not take. I think we're revved up.
Let's
I think
do
we're
it.
Ready to go.
I think I'm ready to go for my hot take. I think let's stick with the island.
Yeah, let it
fly. I'm going to jump in. Hawaii is not that overwhelming when you're from California. It was like just driving up the California coast just with a little bit different foliage. Okay, it was, okay, cool. It's mountains and water. I've seen that, bro. I live there. That's where I live. I see that all the time. I've driven the California coast so many times. I was like, oh, this reminds me of somewhere.
But this is hot. This is hot. Because look,
if
is the water not clearer? Is the water not cleaner? I mean, it's a rainforest.
A little bit.
It's a rainforest.
It's a little bit. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's different foliage.
I'm just talking about the coast. Okay. It's different foliage. Okay, but it's mountains and water. Okay. I've been to mountains and water. If I was, you know, from the Great Plains and I landed in Hawaii, it would be like nothing I had ever experienced in my whole life.
Mm.
But it's mountains and water, man. I mean, I'll just go to Malibu. Why did I spend all this money to park my car to go and look at mountains and water?
Would you go back?
Absolutely, I'd go back, but I wouldn't do it the same way.
Perfect. Okay, that's hot. I love that. Only Joseph.
What is your hot take?
Only Joseph. This is how we know Positive Joe is not only in the cave, but rocks have fallen and have blocked the entrance to the cave, and he is trapped in there slowly, slowly suffocating, because only Joseph would go to a gorgeous island out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean with pristine, you know, forest, clear waters, and go, eh, meh.
I've been to the pier, bro. I mean, come on. What do you want?
Hilarious, dude. Okay. My hot take.
What about you?
Here we go. Back to the Clippers. The Clippers are going to miss the playoffs. And they want to. I'm not convinced this team wants to make a deep run at this point. I think that there's so much rift all over the place. Coaching staff, front office. I actually think that there's very likely a rift within the locker room. I think that there has been a lot of difference of philosophy among the players, and that everyone is so just kind of over it that they're not interested in extending this any longer than it needs to go. Look, they're headed for the play-in. That's where they're at, right? That might be the best case scenario at this point, is making the play-in. I'm not convinced that they want to get out of that. And there is a very real possibility they just say fuck it and don't even go for the play-in. They're not that far out of the play-in on the other side. You know what I mean?
They are a game ahead of 9th and 10th. And the teams behind them are the Jazz and the Pelicans. I believe the Jazz either own the tiebreaker or are close to owning the tiebreaker. They have the Pelicans, who I believe won the only meeting so far. And mm-hmm. I think there's like a few more. So the Clippers could win that tiebreaker. And they're two games ahead of the Lakers. And they're only 2.5 games ahead of the Thunder, who, if the Thunder decide, okay, we're going to go for the play-in, I believe, oh, well, they're up 2-0 now with two more games to go. So the Clippers can't win that tiebreaker. They can only tie it.
And look, the Thunder very well could make that decision, because they could look, in this scenario, it's probably best for them to do that, because they get to say, hey, we made the play-in, plus we get an outside the play-in pick in the offseason.
Right. We knocked the Clippers out and we get their pick.
Yeah.
Right. So we get a lottery pick.
It's a best of both worlds for them.
Well, actually, yeah. I think the pick is convoluted after the Eric Gordon deal. It's like, I think OKC gets right of first refusal to the Clipper pick.
Got it.
And then the worst between the Clippers and OKC goes to the Rockets. And then the Clippers get the Bucks pick.
Right.
Anyway, whatever. So, yeah, man. I mean, it's a hot take, but I agree with it. I think one of the big things about this whole situation that they've gotten themselves into, outside of being 10-5, outside of having the lowest turnover rate in the league, outside of having the number one offense for the last like 14 games of that stretch, right? They started to show resilience in a season where they just gave up all the time. And they had a couple of really big flameouts, 100%. But there were several games where a team started to make a run and the Clippers would respond and have a big boy response and would win the game.
Mm-hmm.
We are back to giving up. I mean, that Golden State loss was fucking pathetic.
Yeah.
Like, they gave up, they rolled over, they shoulder belly, they did all that stuff, right? They obviously showed some resilience against the Kings. Still came up short, mental error, whatever. But it's like the team is back to being 1,000 different parts instead of one unit.
Yeah.
And I think what you're talking about is real. I don't necessarily think this is like Lob City where they hated each other. I just think that there's too many different opinions in the room to be pulling in the same direction right now. And I think
it's got to be exhausting for everybody. I think everybody's just exhausted and they're like, I'm done. I'm done this year.
Well, yeah, and like they still have too many mouths to feed. And I think a big part of the success was they had finally figured out which mouths were actually going to get fed. Yeah. And everybody knew, okay, this is our group. We got to do this. Everybody else is next man up. And I think now it's back to who gets fed and how much.
Right.
And they didn't have that luxury. So Yeah, dude. Only 2.5 out above the Thunder, 2 above the Lakers, 1 above 9 and 10. And they are only a game out of 6th, though. So that still is right. Like, they're still time-ish, but they need to like close the season fucking 15-3 or something like that if right. they really want to do this. And I just don't know if they can figure it out. So I think your take is not unreasonable, even yeah. though it is hot.
The hot part of it is that I don't think they're interested in it.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised
yeah.
if there were a number of people in there like, you know what, man? Fuck it.
Yeah. All right.
I don't want to do this anymore.
Let's get into not take. Look, since we're doing two different topics, I like how we've been doing this. I'm going to go first here since we're still on the topic okay. of the team.
Perfect.
Little roast time here. A lot came out in the last week with Paul George, not necessarily having to do with basketball. Paul George has been busy off the court, right? He went on JJ Redick's podcast, and there was a quote that was pulled out of there. It was pretty big, right? He basically said, look, I had to be real with myself and realize I can't be the guy on a championship team. I can't be the number one option on a championship team. Okay. Look, I think that shows great self-awareness. I have no problem with that, you know, on its own. My not take is Paul George stated that he can't be the guy, but he sure has influenced roster construction and made demands like the guy. And that is where I've got my problem, right? This is the Paul George experience. I'm going to throw a bonus one in here. Paul George's, because the other piece of news, right? Started a podcast. Paul George now has a podcast. He titled it Podcast P. All right. Whatever your feelings are about a player having a podcast or a season, whatever. But Paul George's decision-making can be summed up with his naming of the podcast. He titled it Podcast P when Paulcast was right there. Paulcast was right there and is a much better name.
And isn't based on a nickname for him that was basically mostly used to mock him.
Yeah.
Look, I'm really going to try not to bash Paul George because I'm really not trying to get into the habit of bashing players. Look, the Paul quote that came out was kind of incendiary. They knew what they were doing, clipping that quote. When you listen to the quote in context, he's right. basically saying, like, I looked around the league, everybody was joining up. I realized I couldn't beat them on my own. And so I realized I needed help. Okay, that was his.
Sure. Yeah, that's the context. Yeah.
Quote, right. Which, again, fine, fair. The Heat had 3. He had Roy Hibbert. And it's like, I think if I was in a similar situation, I'd be like, yeah, man, I need some help.
Yeah.
Right. Those Indiana Pacers teams were very good. David West was very good. There were other players. George Hill was very good. I'm not saying that team was bad, but I am saying he went to war with Roy Hibbert against LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh. So, I can see being like, I need a little bit more star power. But it is frustrating to have someone say, you know, publicly at the beginning of the year, I'm number two, act like he's a number two on the floor, and then still try to have his way off the floor. And it's like, well, pick a lane, either fit in or play like the guy. Right. And, you know, you and I had a discussion after the Western Conference Finals about how much we loved Paul George and how we felt like he had kind of really figured it out and putting the ball in his hands was going to make the Clippers their best version. And, yep. you know, we had this whole vision of how it could go because we saw the success that they had with him doing it. And, you know, I had had a take for years that the Clippers are only going to go as far as Paul George takes them because they're at their best when Paul is their most important player.
Yeah.
And he doesn't really seem to want to do that. At least not for the regular season. And for a guy that's had a lot of injuries and worn down and done all that stuff, I get it. And at the same time, I just wish it came with a little bit different mentality.
That's my problem, because I still agree with everything that we said. I still think Paul George can be great. I still think he can be a 1B. You know what I mean? Like, I still think Clippers are their best when he is the most important player. I still agree with all those things. Right.
Offensively. Sorry to clarify.
It's that he has continually said, I'm not interested in doing that. That is the problem. That's where my frustration lies.
The problem is he said, I want to do that, started doing it, and said, oh, wait, no, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Because Doc used him as a number two. And he said, Doc didn't use me right. That's not my game. My game is having the ball in my hands and running the offense. So then Ty said, okay, go do that. And to pretty good success in that first year, and then to great success in the playoffs that season.
Yeah.
Second. And then, yeah. And then, you know, he gets hurt, obviously, but was still really succeeding in that role last season. And then this year he says, that's not my game. Like, dude, you just told us that's your game.
Right.
And we're successful with that being your game. And now you're like, oh, that's not my game. I'm better coming off screens. Bro, you literally told us you didn't want to fucking do that.
Yeah.
So just do it. Pick a lane, do it, and be the best you can at it. I don't care what that lane is. I just want you to pick one. I want you to do it, and I want you to
do it well.
Succeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, it's frustrating.
All right. Hit us with your not take.
I got off the island for this one.
Wow. Okay.
My not take, because I
pick
couldn't.
Joseph, pick a lane, dude. Pick a lane and do it
well. I'm Paul George of this podcast, right? The Clippers disrespected the regular season and championship process. This year is worse than anything we experienced since the beginning of Lob City.
Wow. Okay, break that down.
So, obviously, there were worse times during the Sterling era. Obviously, there were worse times during the Sterling era. But since the team got good, the worst it felt was that last year of Lob City, where it was very clear that the team hated each other. Now, there was some discussion online this week about that, and someone said, well, at least they won 52 games, which is true. That team still won a bunch of games, even though they hated each other. But watching that team was one of the most miserable experiences of my life. They hated each other. It was methodical. You could tell that they didn't want to play together. And then I watched them collapse in the playoffs with my own eyes, like in person. So
yeah,
that really sucked. Okay. But this year really, really just takes the cake. They don't care. They're not winning games. They keep shooting themselves in the foot. And it's just not fun. None of it is fun.
Yeah.
None of it is good. None of it gives you any hope. None of that. With the game, with the end of Lob City, at least you thought, well, maybe they could win a round. Maybe they could do this. Like, they're going to be motivated by trying to win the title.
Right.
But even now, it just feels like there's no anything there. And like the fact that they have said time and time again, we don't give a shit about what's in front of us. It's awful. It's awful. It's disheartening to the fans. It's disheartening for everybody. Like, how do you decide to continue watching and supporting a team that, you know, their basically biggest decision every game is a huge middle finger to you?
Mm-hmm.
No, we don't give a fuck. We don't give a fuck about what you think. We don't give a fuck about what you want. We don't care about making this good. We don't care about winning games. We just care about trying to figure this out our own way and just getting to the end goal, because, yep, we can snap our fingers and just like that, we'll be a championship level team. And it's like, you can't build habits that way. And I really did. I tried so hard. We talked about this beginning of the season. I tried so hard to not fall into that trap at the beginning of the year, at the beginning of this experiment, but it feels like it's gotten worse instead of gotten better. And that's not the right trajectory for a team that wants to win it all.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you, man. It's oh, what a tough one. Look, we'll see where this goes. It's, I don't know, man. There's a lot to say. There's still time, but it's definitely a rough point right now for sure. But let's get into the greatest segment in Clippers podcasting history. Track of the week. I'm going to kick us off. I don't have a long-winded one this week. It's real simple. Just went back to an old favorite. Bad Religion, Suffer. Hey, I maybe subconsciously chose that song on purpose, but song's a track. It's one of, I love Bad Religion. It's such a good era, mid to late 90s Bad mm-hmm. Religion. And that song is just so catchy. And it just gets stuck in my head and plays over and over. So I've been listening to it nonstop. What island song have you been getting down to lately?
I'm still obsessed with Primus. So this may also be a subliminal message if you listen to lyrics, but To Defy the Laws of Tradition by Ooh. Primus.
Okay.
First of all, banger.
Yeah.
Banger way to kick off an album. Banger way to kick off your first album. That song goes real hard, but also maybe a subliminal message like yours is.
Perfect. Well, that is the episode this week. Thank you all so much for joining us. We appreciate the support. Remember to like and subscribe. Go ahead and leave us a rating and review if you know you have such an option. And if you want to take your support just an extra step further, you can sign up at patreon.com/clipsetpod. When you sign up, you get to submit questions to our monthly mailbag episodes. Those episodes go up on Patreon first before anywhere else, so you get first access to that. And when you sign up, you get a shout out on the show. Joseph, do we have any shout outs this week?
We do not.
Well, I will not defy the laws of tradition, and I will continue to suffer. Thank you all so much. We will be back next week. Until then, remember to always, always wash, rinse, sanitize, and repeat.
And if you don't, Donald Sterling wins.
And that's a fact.